quite beautiful the way our Lord gives this man a way out. Give alms. You know, you're stuffy, you're trying to present a good front by your physical observance, but you're not paying any attention to the inside. But as to what is within, give alms, and behold, everything will be clean for you. He's so incisive and yet gentle. He knows that if he can help this man let go of his selfishness and avarice, his heart will change. He knows that for those in positions of authority and some wealth, that's their biggest problem. Very kind. I want to talk about the letter to the Romans. We're still in chapter 1. I'll be on time, and I'm looking at this. It takes me at least 2 hours, maybe 4 hours, to get through this in class. So, bring a sandwich and we'll... Brothers and sisters, I am not ashamed of the gospel. Which gospel? Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John? What gospel? The good news. But the good news isn't words. You know, say you like the Redskins. And I say the Redskins won. Not only would that be a joy, that'd be a miracle. But the words are not good news. It's the victory that's good news. The words mean nothing if they're not bringing you this reality, this fact. So the good news is that God himself has come among us in his Son to teach us, to heal us, finally to die in an act of love, pour out his whole being and his spirit on us, then rise and draw us to himself. That's the good news. Now, it has to be mediated through words and gestures and signs and wonders. But that's the good news. That's what he's not ashamed of. And he says, it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, for Jew first and then Greek. Power of God for salvation for everyone who believes. You have to realize the ancients... This is why you can't read these things like you read Washington Post. That's the structure of the letter right there. The good news, the act of love in which Jesus Christ died and from which flows all the hope that mankind will ever have. You see, that reality is the power of God for salvation. That's chapters 5 to 8. For everyone who believes, Jew first, then Greek, that's chapters 1 to 4. And then, well, that's enough of that for now. For in it, in the good news, there is revealed the righteousness, the holiness, the uprightness of God from faith to faith. As it is written, the one who is righteous by faith will live, or the one who is righteous by faith will live. Because righteousness comes through faith, right? It comes from the grace of God that we are justified. The grace of God through faith. Believe. accept the reality. Do you know that takes some work, huh? I mean, we've sort of done it. We're here, we're, you know. But to really, you've got to stop and pray and think until the awesomeness of what God has done becomes present to you and you believe it. Now he goes on then to develop this first notion by talking of negatively first and then positively, negatively up to chapter 3, verse 20, and then starting verse 3, 20, chapter 3, verse 21, positively. Then he starts talking about faith and the righteousness of God, which is what? Overlooking past sins. That's his righteousness. And so, in this gospel is revealed the righteousness of God from faith, Old Testament, to faith, New Testament. Now he starts talking about the wrath of God is revealed. It's revealed. You need faith to see it. You wring your hands and say, oh, we're in a mess. All right. But that's not a revelation. That's just common sense. The wrath, that this is the wrath of God, which means what? It's the holiness of God, which we can't stand. To walk into God's presence, full of sin, and see the power of that love, is to be repulsed. And that's the wrath. He's not mad. He's never been mad. It's his love, the fire of that love, the insistence of that love, confronting our sinfulness. There are times when you can actually experience this. And while it's an awful experience, down deep in your heart, you're saying to yourself, Lord, please stop. But don't stop. This is very precious. It's the wrath of God. It's not his anger. It's the incompatibility between his love and sin. And this is against every impiety and wickedness of those who suppress the truth. There it is. Suppress the truth. That's the sin. Now, there are people who suppress the truth. Frightening. There are others who suppress it by just not paying any attention. They want, you know, they got their TV, they got their games, they got their this, they got their that, but they don't ever search for God. But suppressing the truth means suppressing it, not letting it up. What truth? The truth of the goodness, beauty, existence, and love of God. The opposite of suppressing the truth is love. If you love, you don't suppress the truth about God. For what can be known about God is evident to them, because God made it evident to them. We don't look at this universe, for instance, in a passive, there it is way and figure out God. God talks to us through this universe. God made it known to them. But we can have, in our day, what Paul saw in his day, a communal, societal, cultural suppression of the truth. You see, the reality of God will impress itself on anybody whose heart is open. You don't have to be a philosopher. It helps. It doesn't, you know, just the reality of God. I mean, walk around, get outside the spot of the disturbia out here, you know, and into, and he meets these farmers. They know God exists. He feeds them. What happened was, at a certain point, and I can only state this, we don't have time to go into it, but it's the tragedy of our last two centuries, really the last seven or eight. Newton was the first one to discover the possibility of explaining and controlling the laws of this universe through mathematics. He said, I can't do it all yet, but I can see that it can be done. What happened? Control. Control. And so this universe has an intrinsic intelligibility. So what do you need God for? You want to make babies? You know, get yourself a Petri dish? I mean, what do you want to do? Want to fly to the moon? It's all doable. Some of it's sinful, but it's all doable. So what do you need God for? God becomes then not the one upon whom we rely for our crops, or for until we get sick, then we rely for health, some, but even there. So the mind becomes dulled. No intuition. No, it's all control. That's why Immanuel Kant's whole philosophy is the justification of Newton's vision of physics. And that's where the world is. What do you need God for? I mean, we're doing fine. You want a baby? Go sign in that store over there and you can have one. You want this? You want that? So what's happened? That the world has achieved this intrinsic intelligibility. But this is where the suppression of the truth comes. They deny that it is a dependent intelligibility. All this beautiful universe with its interlocking laws that can be plotted by physics and made to yield for the advancement and comfort and healing of humankind, all of it is a gift. It's not. You see, we've got over the idea that everything we can do, whatever we can't do, well, God will do. No, we can do everything. That's right. Except live forever. But it's not an independent intelligibility. It's a gift. And that's where we suppress the truth. And so you see the tension over abortion. Well, you know, you Catholics, you think it's a sin and so forth, but you don't have the right to impose your views on the rest of us. This is not what we're saying. This is not a Catholic opinion. This is a Catholic witness to the truth. The truth that is in the very structure of nature. It depends on God. And woe to you if you suppress that truth, because claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for the likeness of an immortal man or birds or animals. God handed them over to the impurity through the lusts of their hearts for the mutual degradation of their bodies. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and revered and worshiped the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. The blindness. And it's frightening. I mean, you calmly can sit and watch Europe disappear. There's not enough people in Europe anymore. We know how to abort babies or kill them. You know, or just stop them from ever getting conceived. And so we run the population, we run the world, we run everything. To whom are we indebted for all of this? God our Father. And to suppress that, you see, is the essential wickedness of man. When we want to sin, the last thing we want to think about is God, right? We do it. Suppress the truth. That's why I pray every day for the church, for the unity of the church. The only place where there's a possibility that God will be recognized and loved and embraced, and the truth, the objective truth of this creation, be understood.